from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
It is Fresh Fridays. The Mariners are one game away from that playoff berth, something they haven't done since 2001, back when the average rent in the United States of America was $700 a month, back when the average home in the state of Washington was $180,000 for a home, back when the average new vehicle was $25,000 for a new vehicle. All things, were things good in 2001? Back when your child was maybe 1 year old or two years old, wasn't born?
I mean, I was thinking of some of the horrible things that happened in 2001.
It was, obviously.
9/11 being one of them. My brother passed away. I mean, I just look back and it's like it was so long ago, yet in some ways felt like yesterday. But we have to go that far back to think of when the Mariners were in the playoffs. And as you heard Scott Servais say earlier, hopefully it'll just be going and going and going and going. But right now, it is time for our What's New at 10 segment. And this is when we bring in
What's New at 10.
The Mariners win it! The magic number is down to one!
Had to get that in because we can't talk about it enough. Michael Medved, our friend and colleague who hosts a show on 770 KTTH. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning. I mean, look, the Mariners are the subject of the moment. I don't know if you know, but the New York Times ran a whole special section. This is the New York Times for the whole country on the Mariners and keeping the Mariners' flame alive and praising Jerry DePoto. Yeah, no, it's unbelievable.
Very, very cool. So how are you feeling, though? Because you are a huge Mariners fan.
I am. It is terrific. First of all, it is unbelievable that it's been 21 years. It doesn't feel that long ago. It just doesn't. But it's also that this group of people, first of all, they've been very smart in signing up some of the stars to stay here so they don't suddenly become Yankees or Astros or something else. And for Julio Rodriguez and for Castillo, who has to pick it up in the last couple of starts that he's going to have, the regular season. But what's really incredible and exciting to me is the notion that they have a shot at the first wild card slot, which means that they would open up the postseason right here at T-Mobile.
You're exactly right. And then there's the possibility of them having, what, three games at T-Mobile, which would be awesome. So question for you, though, as long as we're talking about Seattle being in the spotlight. Recently, I don't know if you saw it, but Gene Balkan, the Seattle Times, had this survey that he talked about that found that across the country, about 40% of Americans have really strong feelings about the city of Seattle. Either they loved it and think great things about it, or they think it's awful. Right. L.A. and San Francisco were the only other two cities that also were as polarizing when it came to opinions about the city. And just from your perspective, as someone who has lived in this region for a very long time, do you think Seattle gets an unfair bad rap in the national media, especially among conservative media?
Yes, I do. And by the way, that if you look at the interior of that survey and the summary of surveys that was published in the Seattle Times, Seattle was ranked second, and second in terms of the city people most wanted to live in.
Yes,
the other city, and it ranked eighth in the city that people least wanted to live in. So, again, it wasn't quite balanced between the people who hate us and the people who really love the city. There are lots of people. Like, my brother is coming up for the weekend, and we almost got him to move here shortly after we moved, which is 26 years ago. But there are a lot of people here who love coming to Seattle. And yes, it's troubling to see all of the graffiti taking over. That is just something I hate and I mention a lot.
Me too.
Because really we ought to be able to do something about it. But we have homeless problems. A lot of people have homeless problems. If we could take care of some of those items that are cramping up downtown in particular, we used to have a reputation for having a particularly vital, vibrant, beautiful downtown. And with all of the new building and all of the new condos and apartments and everything else, we ought to get back to that. We don't want to follow the path of Portland.
Michael, you got a lot of graffiti on your block in your neighborhood?
Nope.
Oh. Hey, I want to ask you about the former GOP congressman, Denver Ringelmann.
He's a good guy.
Good guy.
He's interested in Bigfoot, too.
Oh, okay. Didn't know that.
He and my husband.
Well, recently, he says he has legitimate concerns that Clarence Thomas was involved in a push to overturn the election. And he says that Clarence Thomas should be investigated. Your thoughts on that?
Well, again, they just did the interview with Ginny Thomas, and apparently she told the interviewers, at least that's the report in the New York Times, that she never talked about her activism with her husband, and her activism is highly dubious. What's surprising to me is that Ginny Thomas is not a complete idiot. I mean, come on. And the fact that she told, at this stage, she told the January 6th committee that she still believed the election was stolen. And honestly, you have to be so blind and so hypnotized and so much off the deep end at this point to believe that the election was still stolen, an election where Joe Biden won the popular vote by 7 million votes. And they claim that there are states like Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, the margin was 80,000 votes. It wasn't like we had, obviously here, we had Gregoire versus Dino Rossi back in 2004. That ended up being, what was it, 327 votes statewide?
Yes.
There was nothing like that. There was nothing like that this time. And it's a shame that Ginny Thomas is still associated with that idea of a stolen election, which, by the way, is the worst thing for Republicans. I mean, any Republican who is talking about that idea or advancing that idea is hurting his own cause or her own cause and damaging the cause of the party.
Yeah, I can't think that that's a good strategy at all, for sure.
No, it's a brain dead strategy. And again, it's time to move on. Remember the organization MoveOn.org, which started during the Bill Clinton impeachment crisis. Mm-hmm. And they were just tired of hearing about who said what to whom and DNA on a dress and all of that. And it was basically time to move on. Yeah. And you know what? Mm. Regarding the stolen election lie, and it is a lie,
yeah.
High time to move on.
What does Tiffany Smiley think about the election?
She has basically accepted it, and she has not challenged it. But she has to be careful, of course, in terms of her campaign, not to alienate those people, and they are a segment of the Republican Party, even here in the enlightened state of Washington.
So does she always believe that the election was right? I don't know. Maybe you know better. Did Tiffany Smiley always believe that Joe Biden won the election?
I don't think she ever questioned it. And if she did, then that would be a legitimate subject for her to be attacked on by Patty Murray. What I don't think is a legitimate attack is this controversy they have right now with the Seahawks, and who have their own challenges. The Seahawks and Starbucks and the Seattle Times all challenging the Smiley campaign because they used images of a closed Starbucks shop downtown.
Right, in her campaign ad.
Correct. And I mean, I understand they don't want to be associated with one campaign or another, but really, if that's the biggest scandal you've got against Tiffany Smiley,
well, I think she should feel. I mean, I'm sure, and I know that I've heard her on interviews on our station and elsewhere where she feels pretty good about where she's at. Certainly, she is giving Senator Patty Murray, her biggest challenge since Patty Murray's been in office. I don't remember anyone being anywhere remotely close to where Tiffany Smiley has been. And we do plan on having her and Senator Murray on our show prior to the election. I want to move on to another politician and Governor Ron DeSantis, because G and I were actually impressed with how he has been handling the hurricane. And actually appreciated that he, I think, was on with Tucker Carlson, was it? Where he said, I just don't want to get into the petty stuff right now. We need help and we need to work together.
Yeah. Kudos to Governor DeSantis and to President Biden, who have been talking on the phone and working together and dropping the partisanship for once. Now, this is very important because if you look back to the election of 2012, it was really his distinguished nonpartisan handling of Tropical Storm Sandy on the East Coast that got Barack Obama reelected. And in other words, it turned out that there were 12% of all voters who said that the handling of Hurricane Sandy was an important issue for them. That was much higher than 12% when you talk about voters who made up their minds in the last moment. And all of those voters who made up their minds in the last moment or who listed Hurricane Sandy, Tropical Storm Sandy, as important, Obama won 80% of those voters. And that was a close election where that helped him win.
Ron DeSantis?
It can make DeSantis seem more credible, almost likable.
Yeah. Back in 2013, when Ron DeSantis was a freshman congressman during that time, how did he vote on the federal bailout after Hurricane Sandy?
Probably no.
He did. He did. Yeah, he definitely opposed that federal bailout. So in your opinion, what do you think has changed with Governor DeSantis today?
I don't think he's looking for change. I think that Governor DeSantis is doing very well, and he's doing very well as an alternative to President Trump. What nobody knows is, would he really run against Trump if Trump stays in the race? By the way, I don't think he will. Because in terms of running against the rest of the Republican field or the potential Republican field, I think DeSantis is formidable. I think what he has is a personality problem. Remember back when George W. Bush was running for president, people talked about the fact that you want to vote for a guy, you want to nominate a guy who you'd like to have a beer with. I don't think that Ron DeSantis is pretty tightly wound and serious about politics and can be pretty harsh in some of his statements. I think that if he warms up the public image a little bit and works on that likability issue, he will be a formidable and viable candidate.
Okay, one of the other things that is making headlines right now is this blunder that President Biden did and I'm gonna, in case anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, this is what happened. He called for GOP Congresswoman Jackie Walorski, but she had actually passed away in an accident earlier.
And I want to thank all of you here, for including bipartisan elected officials like Representative Governor, Senator Braun, Senator Booker, Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? I didn't think she was going to be here.
And I get that it's embarrassing, but now it's, you know, oh, he's got dementia. This is a sign that he really is not in control of any of his, you know, his, he doesn't have his mental faculties or any other thing, and he's just a puppet, you know, walking around. How does that actually help the GOP?
I don't know. I mean, I think it certainly doesn't help Biden. I do think that this is an embarrassing thing, and one of the things that has been stupid has been the way that it's been handled by the press spokesman.
I agree.
where she should just acknowledge, okay, this is a mistake, and she later did point out that Biden had already scheduled a meeting with her family, that they were being invited to this bill signing, which was a bill that Jackie Walorski had worked on. And the fact that he was remembering, I mean, he was trying to do something positive, mentioning some of the Republicans who had worked together on this bill. And the fact that he was trying to remember the people who had worked on the bill, he remembered Jackie Walorski, they didn't remember her last name. But the idea that this somehow endangers the Republic, I don't think so. And I do think, look, the guy's going to be 80. He's too old to be president, but he's going to be president for the next 2 years. And the idea of people talking about invoking the 25th Amendment because of this embarrassing gaffe, and there's no way that it's not embarrassing, the idea of making that the biggest focus of your attention in the midterm elections, I think, takes away from the fact that the Republicans have terrific issues that they should emphasize when it comes to inflation, overspending, crime, and basically the sort of the breakdown of just normal life here in the country, where 75% of people think we're on the wrong track. If you can't win an election on those issues without trying to go after Joe Biden's personal shortcomings, which are many, that's not a good sign for Republicans.
Inflation. I'm glad you just brought that up, because let's be real. Inflation is a real big deal to many Americans in this country. There are a lot of people that it is hitting hard. To which I want to ask you about something, because I know that coming in November, the strategy is going to be running on inflation, especially for the Republican Party. So tell me about the six Republican-led states that are going to be suing the Biden administration to stop the student loan forgiveness plan.
So great question, and I'm glad you asked it. It's exactly pertinent to what's wrong and what's causing the inflation problem.
Oh,
the inflation problem we have is overspending. When the government spends more and more money and pumps more and more money into the system, then that means that there is more money to go around that you can charge. And it's a general rule of economics is the more government spends, the more it promotes inflation. And here you're talking about even the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, is talking about $420 billion spent in forgiving old student loans, which honest to goodness, is not fair to the people who have paid their loans or the people who didn't go to college.
Really quick, fair enough. I wish we had more time, but I'm going to use this last minute to ask you this. During the time where student loans, the payment had been forgiven, where it had been stalled and paused, and nobody was paying their student loans, it was on pause, nobody was paying. During that time, how did that cause inflation to go higher?
Because it was contributing to the general influx of money in the system. And the more you have money, dollars, in the system, the less each of those dollars is worth, because there are just more of them. And this is supply and demand. And basically, I don't think there's any serious economic disagreement. Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, for President Obama, Larry Summers acknowledges very directly that part of the inflation problem has been government overspending. And we honestly, particularly at a time when we're trying to avoid a recession and to bring down the rate of inflation, we've got to get the spending more.
Now, Michael, make sure when you're talking about that, make sure you talk about all the PPP loans that have been forgiven, too. Right. We need to talk about that in this country, because there are a lot of people that had loans forgiven in this country, from the Tom Brady's to a lot of people that, you know what? It's not fair that you didn't have to pay back your PPP loans. Remember, that happened in this country, Michael.
Yes, it did. And the PPP loans were directly, the purpose of them was to keep people hired. You only got a PPP loan and you got it forgiven if during the pandemic you didn't fire anybody. You let them keep their jobs. And for a lot of people, that's actually one of the successes that the government had in dealing with the pandemic and the economic impact.
But unfortunately, we also learned a lot of people took great advantage of that when they didn't need that money. Anyway, we're going to wrap up right now. But, Michael, thank you so much. We'll do this again next week.
Go Mariners. You know, it would be so great if they clinch everything tonight. They have their magic number with one. And there's a big fireworks display scheduled at T-Mobile. And this could be a great evening for the city of Seattle and for the whole region.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Coming up.
Have a great weekend.
Coming up next on the G and Ursula Show, Mike Salk is going to come in and help us better understand what's up with these red-hot Mariners and how they're one game away from the playoffs. G and Ursula.
The G and Ursula Show. Happy Fresh Friday to all of you. So as we have been talking about today, the last time the Seattle Mariners were in the playoffs, Apple had just released the iPod. Shrek was big in the movies and Janet Jackson had a top hit. Okay.
And
right
Mike
now.
Mike Salk was nice.
And Mike Salk was really sweet. Was he? Were you in grade school, Mike?
In 2001? I was,
you're not that young.
I graduated college the year before.
There you go. Hey, yeah. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Well, we're just talking about the Mariners and how close we are to ending this playoff drought.
Well, they're going to end it. I mean, it will end probably tonight, maybe over the weekend, but most likely tonight. I mean, any loss in the last seven games by the Orioles puts them in. Any win for the Mariners in the last seven games puts them in. So, yeah, they're going to go to the playoffs. That now has been just about set in stone. It's just a matter of sort of where they're positioned and what they look like going in, how much rest, or, you know, who's hot, who's not. But, yeah, this drought is over. Pretty darn cool, huh?
It is cool. And I gave you had to give you praise on your show this morning, but I'm going to give you praise again from the very beginning and even through the downs. And it was a lot of downs during the time as Scott Servais has been the skipper. You have always said that he was the guy that was going to get the Mariners over the hump. He was going to be the guy to get the Mariners to the playoffs. What is it about Scott Servais that you have seen this entire time?
You know, he's a little different. He's not an old school baseball guy. He doesn't yell at his players. He doesn't yell and scream. He's not Lou Piniella. Nobody's afraid of him. He's a nice guy. He really is. He's a pretty normal dude. He's a nice guy, but he came in with a purpose to develop players, to make them hard to play against, and to build a culture where the guys were, you know, empowered, but also really close. And he spent a lot of time working with the players to have them get to know each other because he felt like that was important. Remember, in a baseball clubhouse, you're dealing with guys from all over the U.S., different races, different languages. You're dealing with players from the Dominican Republic and Venezuela, other Spanish-speaking nations, Korean, Japanese players. I mean, it's a melting pot, and there's a challenge of trying to get guys on the same page, sometimes just speaking the same language. And he set about having them get to know each other. And it worked out. It took a while. Some of the veterans that were there at the time he built and younger players came up, it started to work real well.
Okay, don't move whatever you're doing because you're cutting in and out. So is it enough, though, just to say, okay, we got into the playoffs? Or how far do the Mariners have to get in to say, yeah, this was a really successful season?
Well, they just broke a 20-year drought. It's been a successful season. End of story, right? I mean, from a fan perspective, it has been successful. I don't know how else to look at that. But from their perspective, they're hungry for more. And with the pitching that they have, they're perfectly capable of getting more. I mean, they got one of the best pitching staffs in the league. They get hot offensively, even a little bit, and they're perfectly capable of winning some games and some series in these playoffs.
Well, So what's it going to look like? So they win this game. Obviously, Scott Servais, he said he wants to win tonight. He said they're going to clinch tonight. There's one game. They win this game. They're in the playoffs. Tell us what needs to happen. I don't want to get too greedy, but tell us what needs to happen for the Mariners to be playing here at T-Mobile Park.
Well, they're going to need to finish with the number one wild card seed. Right now, they're a couple games behind Toronto, and they'd have to leapfrog Tampa as well. So they need to win some games here in the final seven. They got three against Oakland, followed by four against Detroit. They're all winnable games. I mean, those two teams are pretty bad. So they're not, like, out of the possibility of hosting some playoff games here. I would say it's more likely they'll start on the road, but look, they just need a couple of guys to get hot. And we started to see it last night. Mitch Haniger, who's been a stalwart for this team in the past, has been hurt and not effective much of this year, but he hit two home runs last night. Jared Kelnick, who came up with Julio, was supposed to be one of these two young stars, has not done much this year, but he hit two home runs last night and has been very hot for the last week. So if you can just add a couple of those bats to Julio when he comes back on Monday, with their pitching staff, gee, honestly, sky's the limit.
Well, I'll go ahead.
I love talking about the Seattle Mariners, but I got, with just the remaining time that we have left, I got to bring up one other story that is trending right now.
You ever done anything dangerous?
Okay, I'm guessing you've seen the TikTok video where Russell Wilson is trying to make us fall in love with his favorite sandwich.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to split this Subway sandwich? It is my signature sandwich. It's called the Danger Witch.
Okay. We want to know, is there anyone who tells Russell, nah, this is not a good idea? This is not something you want. This is not going to help your brand. It's not going to help, you know, the Bronco fans from falling in love with you. I guess they're now booing him over there, too.
Yeah, he's been booed, or their offense has anyway, in both of his starts in Denver. No, there doesn't seem to be, Ursula. There doesn't seem to be anybody, at least that he listens to, that can tell him no. He seems to have kind of surrounded himself with a lot of people who say yes. And that's why I have G around me. They always tell me no.
Salk, have a great weekend. What are you doing this weekend, bro?
Well, I might find my way down to the ballpark at some point if I can, because this is a historic moment, man. It's been 20 years, 21 years, and an opportunity for the Mariners to get this awful monkey off their back. And by the way, this year is just the beginning. I mean, this team is pretty well stacked now for the future.
Very true.
This is the beginning of the window. This is the Seahawks in 2012.
12. Yep. Coming up next in the G and Ursula Show at 11 o'clock, it will be time for Agree to Disagree. And the hot topic is gym memberships. Yes, we'll be discussing that. But right now, let's get to scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
So here's what happened. My kid had a birthday party about 3 weeks ago. He had a bunch of friends over, and they were having a great time. When it was time to blow out the candles, one of the neighborhood kids decided to blow out the candles before my son got a chance to do it. Basically, this kid took away my son's big birthday moment. This kid is always doing things like this. His dad's a jerk, by the way. Well, I got annoyed, and I scolded the kid in front of everyone. He cried, and he went home. My wife got really mad at how I handled it and said that I was acting like a jerk. Well, I disagreed. He took away my son's moment at that time. Well, 3 weeks later, my kid is having a sleepover. I asked him who was coming over, and he told me that two of his good friends were coming. I asked about the little kid from across the street, and my son said he invited him, but the kid doesn't want to come over now because he's scared of me. Now I kind of feel like I'm a jerk. What do you guys think I should do in this situation? 888-973-5476 is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you up the bat first.
So, I would consider going over to talking to the kid's parents and saying, you know what, you know, this is something that happened at my kid's birthday party. I think maybe I overreacted. I would love if we could have a meet, you know, have a get together with you, so it wouldn't just be this parent and the kid. It would be the kid with his parents and you. And you know, maybe apologize to him and say, you know, the kid was just being a kid, blowing out candles. I don't know how many birthday parties I've been to where other kids candles.
I've never seen it.
Oh, I have. Especially when they're younger. I mean, I don't know. Have you seen it?
I've never seen it.
I've seen kids try.
Or they've tried. Yeah, exactly. They've tried. So, I mean, it was a kid being a kid. And if he feels, now he's saying, maybe I was a jerk. If the kid's scared of him, you don't want a kid to be scared of you, do you? You know.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess depending on what it's about. But blowing candles and now it affects a friendship. I mean, if the kid's a bully and you don't want the kid over anywhere, just let it go.
Oh, well, your strategy worked. The kid won't be blowing up the candles no more at nobody else's party. And by the way, I've seriously have never seen any other kid that wasn't their birthday blow out the candles. Chef?
Okay, so first of all, maybe you shouldn't yell at someone else's kid, but you know what? It happens.
Yeah.
I mean, I have been yelled at by many of my friends' parents growing up. Rightfully so. Sometimes you have to tell a child what you're doing right now is unacceptable behavior, and there's not a calm way to deliver that message in a way that actually lands with the child. Now, we're missing the context on how did you yell at them, how loud was it, right?
Right.
Did you swear at the child, those sort of things. But you know what? Giving a kid a little, hey, you need to stop doing that. That's completely acceptable. I don't think you need to have some kind of a family meeting with the other child. If the kid doesn't feel okay coming over, that's on him. But a future note for you, those little paper plates that you have passed out for the cake sitting in there in the stack, just pick one up. And when the kid tries to blow out the candle, you just put it in front of their face. It's a little wind guard. It works every single time.
Okay, if you can catch it in time.
You know, what kind of kids y'all be seeing at parties? That is
three
seriously.
And 4 and 5 year olds.
Exactly, they're little.
They don't understand sharing.
Yes. So there's a few things missing from this story.
Hold on. Okay, I got kids too, and 3 and 3 year olds aren't all standing around the birthday cake. The 3 year olds are usually with their parents off to the side while the 3 year old is in front of their parent right there getting ready to blow it.
We're telling you, we've both either seen it or have had to try to stop it. So,
All right.
Good for you that you haven't actually had to experience that.
Okay.
So, what's your thought?
My thoughts on it is as the dad or as the parent, you have a child that's across the street that's scared of you. You need to go make that right. You don't want any kids in your neighborhood scared of you. You know what I mean? Even though I know the little kid did some little dumb move, you still go across the street. And I would say you do definitely have a meeting and you go over there with the, you know, be cool with the parents. And, hey, little kid, bring him a little prize or something. You don't want a kid scared of you. And maybe you didn't handle it or you did. You know, your emotions got the best of you. You don't want a kid scared of you.
Well, especially if your wife also said, yeah, you might have gone overboard on that one. So I'm thinking that it was enough to raise an eyebrow.
Yeah. You don't want no kids scared of you. That's not cool. And especially, like you said, obviously your wife said that you were a jerk about it. So you must have been. You might be being light about it. You must have raised your voice. You can't do that either. And by the way, I just want to make this point as well. I think the kids would be a lot more well-behaved if the neighbors in the neighborhoods were allowed to do what they did back in my day.
What was that?
I got spanked by the neighbors. Yes, we did. Old school,
I'm not
baby.
Letting anyone put their hand on my kid. Are you kidding me?
Okay, I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I also used to get, when I didn't do my homework, Brother David at Catholic school, I would also get spanked for that too. Was that ridiculous? Yes, it was ridiculous, but it happened. But I do think that sometimes the neighbors can say, "Little Larry, you need to chill."
Yeah, look, if the neighbor comes over to my house and says, "Hey, I need to talk to you because your child is apparently scared of me because I yelled at him." Okay, Matthew, why did the neighbor yell at him? I blew out the candles on his son's birthday cake. Okay, you deserved it. You can go home now. That's going to be the end of the conversation.
I think there was some proper parenting put in place here. I think the dad had to teach this kid a lesson. He had to learn it eventually. Maybe he should have approached it in a softer way, but if down the line, this kid had to realize it was one kid's birthday. I think he's good parenting. Just don't blow the kids out. The paper plate, I think that's a great idea. And I think the kid's going to grow out of the fear. He'll be fine.
All right, but can we all admit one thing now, too?
What's that?
That the whole blowing out the candles was ridiculous and that it took a pandemic for us finally to get it right by not blowing out the candles and actually waving now the candles and actually doing candles.
Do you still blow out the candles?
You still blow out the candles?
Yes.
And still cut that same cake?
Yes.
That's nasty.
Who knows what's going on there?
That's nasty. That's flat out nasty.
Then don't eat the cake.
Exactly.
Coming up next on the Gene Urson Show, we got agree to disagree, and gym memberships is the top topic. Gene Urson.